It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Verrett. Earlier this month, Governor Evers proposed a measure that would give citizens more lawmaking power. Currently, Wisconsin voters can only vote on referenda to change the state's constitution, and those referenda can only be added to the ballot by lawmakers.
The governor's proposal would allow voters to add initiatives to ballots themselves, including referenda that would change the constitution or state law. They would only require a simple majority to pass.
The proposal is likely to be scrapped, as prominent Republican lawmakers have already come out against it.
WPR listeners called in with ideas about initiatives they would want on the ballot. Let's listen to a message from John.
This could provide a reasonable method for citizens to agree to change laws so that we can find better funding sources for things like conservation. Whether it will happen with a Republican legislature and a Democratic governor, I have my doubts at this time, but the pendulum does swing, and I hope that it will swing in the direction of listening more to citizens in the not-too-distant future.
And we got a call from Suzanne.
I'm wholeheartedly in favor of citizen referendum. So looking at initiatives that would raise dollars for early care and education is of critical need.
And a listener named Christina wrote in to support a ballot initiative to determine whether public tax dollars should be allowed to go to private schools.
What would citizen initiatives mean for Wisconsin? We're going to learn more about them and what they look like in other states. Scott Lacombe is an assistant professor of government and of statistical and data sciences at Smith College. Scott, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
My pleasure.
Now, before we get into the prospects of changes here in Wisconsin, I want to talk about our terms a little bit. Different states approach these things in different ways. Can you talk about the difference between different kinds of citizen initiatives and popular referenda?
Yeah, sure. So, right, there's a lot of very specific terminology here that most people are probably not aware of. So we have referendum in general, right? And this idea, it's being referred, right? So referendum, Wisconsin has this, right? Are laws sent from the legislature for the voters to vote on. And what is being proposed are what are called initiatives. And what distinguishes a referendum from an initiative is the citizens are initiating this process. So citizens are collecting signatures. The legislature is not part of this at all. The state government's not part of this at all. And so that's the real distinguishing factor here is for a different type of ballot measure. Initiatives in this case would be proposed by the voters.
Now here in Wisconsin, we can only see those things happening in national news when we hear reports about other states. How common are those citizen-initiated initiatives out there?
Yeah, so about half the states have it. 24 states have it. 26 do not have the initiative itself. Now, just because they have it doesn't mean they always use it. Mm-hmm. So we have some states like California where they might see 8, 10, 12 initiatives basically every general election. And then you have other states like Mississippi and Illinois that while they have this process, it's just not used very frequently, if at all.
Now we've got Governor Evers proposing this idea, and spoiler, Republicans in the legislature don't look like they're going to go along with it, so this may not happen anytime soon. From what you're seeing and hearing here in Wisconsin, what are the options that could be on the table for us?
Yeah, so I think you're absolutely right that the prospects of this happening are pretty slim right now. With the current Republican majority, they've just shown basically no interest in passing this. That being said, with the new state-level district boundaries, you know, 2026, 2028, who knows what direction the state legislature is going to go. But I would say until you see the elections either be consistently more competitive or even get a Democratic trifecta, there's really not a lot of options because the only way that the state can get this initiative process, be it for constitutional amendments or just laws, what we call a statutory initiative, you're going to need the state legislature on board to pass changes to the state constitution.
I want to talk a little bit about the political history of these citizen initiatives. As I understand it, some states came on board with it during the progressive era. But then I remember a period of time where initiatives were often driven by conservative agendas, funding changes in states like California. And then hold on, now modern day, we're seeing a lot of more liberal approaches, ending abortion restrictions, that kind of thing. How have you seen these things change over the years in terms of their partisan lean?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the most fascinating things about the ballot initiative that a lot of people just don't understand is it's not necessarily a conservative or a liberal institution. It's really dependent on the context that it was that it's existing in. In the progressive era, we see all these states start to propose these policies. Almost every state with the ballot initiative adopted it between, you know, basically 1900 and 1930, with a few exceptions. But really, the key thing to note about the initiative is it's what we call a corrective institution. So it's all dependent on where the state is relative to the people. And so if the state government's very conservative relative to the people, then it's going to pull policy in a more liberal direction and vice versa. And so right now we're really in a moment that Republicans just dominate at the state level, right? This is not just in Wisconsin. They control a majority of the state legislatures. They control almost a supermajority of governors as well. And so the only way that Democrats in a lot of these states are able to get policies passed is through institutions like the ballot initiative. Versus in earlier eras, right, where Democrats have a lot more control at the state level, you see things like the tax reform you're talking about or same-sex marriage bans or other policies being proposed in these states.
Now, an interesting phenomenon over the last year or two is we see some states, more conservative-leaning states, approve what might be seen as liberal ballot measures, say, on abortion, but then still elect candidates from more conservative bent who oppose those kind of changes. What is it that makes voters lean one way, maybe an initiative, but still vote for politicians who would lean the other way?
Yeah, I mean, and this is also very interesting, and I think it frustrates a lot of people, right? So I grew up in Missouri, my home state, legalized marijuana, abortion, raised the minimum wage, but voted for a supermajority Republican legislature, right? And what that shows you is partisanship is complicated, right? In this current era where the parties are so polarized, you're almost certainly not going to agree with your party on every single issue. And something that the ballot initiative allows voters to do is say, well, we're on board with this party, be it Democrat or Republican, on a variety of issues, but we can extract the specific ones that we disagree with them on. So I can vote for President Trump, I can vote for Republican in my state legislature, but I can also vote to restore abortion rights in my state, right, which happened in a number of states in 2024. And so I think it's important to remember that voters aren't a monolith and they have pretty distinct opinions that you can separate out from partisanship on a variety of issues.
Talking to Scott Lacombe from Smith College, looking at the idea of citizen initiatives. We don't have those in Wisconsin. Governor Evers says we should have some form of that. Scott, let's look at the arguments for and against. What are some of the main highlights of the debate over whether these citizen initiatives are a good idea?
Yeah, so advocates, and this is going all the way back to the progressive era, are going to say, right, our politics are corrupt. These party machines kind of control everything. And so we want to give power directly to the people. And I think that's really the core argument in favor of the initiative is saying, let voters vote directly on this. And so you might have cleaner policies, right? Less corrupt policies. But it's also a check on the state government saying, hey, you stepped too far in one direction. On the other hand, right, arguments against really kind of focus on a couple different metrics, right? One is, are voters qualified to know and research all of the background behind these policies and vote directly on it, right? The point of a representative government is to have representatives, right, do their diligent research. And are voters really able to do that? And we see cases in states like California, for example, where there'll be three or four ballot measures on the exact same topic. And voters go, well, which one of these regulations do I want to pass, right? And so one is just the voters maybe aren't capable of making those decisions. But then also there's real fears of a tyranny of the majority, right? As we saw in the 2000s, a lot of states banned same-sex marriage with a simple majority vote. And so if we don't have this legislature that's kind of filtering out legislation in a, you know, very ideal context, then the ballot initiative might end up creating too many options for a tyranny of the majority.
I want to look at some of the practical elements here. Different states have different thresholds on their referenda. So in some cases, it's the majority approves the referendum, great, it's in. We saw Florida, a majority of voters supported marijuana legalization, but hang on, there was, I think, a 60% threshold. What are some of the different variations in the rules of how these things work?
Yeah, so there's two major ones, and you just hit one exactly, right? Different states have different thresholds for how high of a percentage you need to pass the legislation. So as you noted in Florida, you need 60%, not 50. There are also other ways in which initiatives are different. Some states have higher thresholds for how many signatures you need to collect. Right. So in some states, they say to get an initiative directly on the ballot, you need 4 or 5% of the voters to sign on to this initiative. Other states, it's as high as 12 or 13%. And so that's a huge difference. It's obviously going to be a lot harder to get an initiative on the ballot with a high signature requirement. And then also some states have what we call distribution requirements. So it's not good enough to just get 5, 10, whatever percent of voters to sign on to this initiative, but you need them to be distributed across all the congressional districts in the state. And you particularly see this in states with a big rural-urban divide, because the fear is, well, we don't want these urban communities to dominate state politics. We want to make sure the whole state's on board with this.
A big question is, who writes the question? How is the language of a ballot question determined? In Wisconsin, it comes out of the legislature for these constitutional ones. The way you ask a question, we know from polling, can influence how people feel about it. How does the language get developed under these citizen initiative processes?
Yeah, this has been a huge sticking point recently. And so in many states, the Secretary of State is the one that writes this ballot measure. They get to propose a summary of here's what the measure will and won't do. Other states, interest groups can actually write the text itself, including the rationale for and against it. And what has been a real focal point in fights in recent years are discussions on how can you frame this issue to voters, right? In Missouri, we had a law repealing the abortion ban, an initiative. And in that state, the Secretary of State tried to add justification opposing the initiative by saying, this is going to cost billions of dollars to the state, right? Because we're going to have people get aborted. We're no longer going to have them earning money, tax revenue, all of that. And so as you can imagine, advocates of this initiative were furious. They fought this with the judge saying, right, you can't include this kind of language. It's not a justifiable cost. And you see these battles all over the country and who gets to write these bills, because that's going to dramatically influence how voters feel about these initiatives.
Then I wonder about implementation, because even here in Wisconsin, without these citizen initiatives, we spend a lot of time in courts between lawmakers and the executive branch and businesses and things about how we put laws that are passed into practice. Well, now we've got these initiatives. They're summed up in, a couple lines or a paragraph on our ballot. Has it been a challenge to take that starting point and then put it into practice?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's obviously going to vary by the bill itself, but there's been all sorts of fights over to what extent legislatures are bound by whatever the initiative says, particularly if it's really vague language. So to give you an example, several states have expanded Medicaid through the ballot initiative. Well, where's the funding mechanism for that, right? Who gets to allocate that spending? At what level? And you see these fights time and time again on many initiatives. And that's definitely one of the arguments against these initiatives is, right, we don't want to do legislation through one paragraph discussions, right? We want long bills. We want lots of text. And so this absolutely is an area that's created a lot of tension in the states.
I want to get into some of your research. You've looked at the question of, okay, if we have citizen initiative processes, does that mean we are changing the law more? Or does it mean that law changes that are happening around the country happen faster in states with this process versus states that don't have it? What kind of things do we know?
Generally, what we can say is that states with the initiative process tend to be more innovative. They tend to pass policies faster. Now, the reason that we think that is the case is you have this new tension in the state where the legislature knows, hey, if we don't act, then the voters are going to overturn what we, you know, tried to do, right? Or if we pass policies that they don't like. And so because the legislatures know they just have this constant pressure, and so because of that, they're constantly going to be worried, well, if we don't pass these policies now, then the voters are going to pass something we like even less. And so they're constantly adjusting their policies. It's not always the case, right? There's some situations where the initiative may actually stop policies from being passed that otherwise would have. But generally, we can say that these states tend to be more innovative and their policies tend to more closely track what the public wants.
Well, to take a concrete example that comes up a lot, various forms of marijuana legalization, medical and recreational. Wisconsin, a big holdout among a lot of our neighboring states in not having any kind of legalization. So the argument might be there, okay, if there was that initiative process, lawmakers who were worried about marijuana legalization might be motivated to pass something, but with more restrictions versus the fear of a citizen initiative that throws the door wide open. Is that something that could conceivably happen in that framework?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think you hit the nail on the head, right? Initiatives are very costly. It takes a lot of time and money to, you know, collect all these signatures, to run ads, to campaign on it. And so if the legislature can get just close enough to the public where that effort isn't worth it, then that's a way that they can kind of neutralize the initiatives. But you look at a map of the states, particularly in the Midwest, and Wisconsin just stands out time and time again, along with Iowa, of being surrounded by states with legalized marijuana, higher minimum wage, Medicaid expansion, all these policies that the legislature would face far more pressure to consider, at least, if the state had the initiative process.
Scott, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much.
Scott Lacombe is an assistant professor of government and of statistical and data sciences at Smith College. He talked to us about citizen-led referenda and ballot initiatives.